Hey, closet busters, come on and gather around. It's time once again to kick down those closet doors of life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemons, bold move expert and coming out coach, and I'm going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on, grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step in to living your truth as we explore more stories, tips, and tricks for living your life uncloseted. Now let's get to the show. Hey, closet busters. It's time for Life Uncloseted, where excuse making, that dreaming and not doing stuff, and apologizing for living your life your way just doesn't cut it. And this is where we actually say, screw it. I'm going to kick down the closet doors of my life. I'm going to set myself free, and I'm going to start living my life uncloseted. And today we're going to be talking about eating healthy, exercise, and being fit, which is one way to look at life. Or we can see it from that other direction where it's, damn it, it's a diet, exercise that you hate, and I'm never going to be fit, so why the fuck should I bother? Well, welcome to the closet of personal well-being and that stupid battle of the bulge, which most of us have struggled with at some point in time in our life. And it can be a really scary, deep place to go that most of us go, shoot, how am I ever going to get past this? How am I going to uncloset myself to be the healthiest self I can be? And we often ask ourselves, how do I get there? How do I get out of the clutches of that health and fitness craze? Or how do I escape that voice that says you're just one big loser so that you can turn the corner and become a winner? Well, coming out of the closet today with me is former Biggest Loser contestant Marty Wolf to share his roller coaster journey of his own closet journey around weight gain and weight loss and the mindsets he's had to encounter. And he's going to share what he's learned about where it all starts, which is with yourself at square one. Welcome to Life Uncloseted, my friend Marty Wolf. Hey, Marty, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited you're here. And for the listeners, this is probably one of the very first episodes of Life Uncloseted, and I couldn't think of a better person to bring on this. And I call Marty my friend, and quite honestly, we're going to be real naked about the truth here. We're really just getting to know each other during this podcast. We happen to be in a speaking group together, which we've shot some messages back and forth, but this is kind of like our virgin date together. So I'm excited about this, man.
Yeah, this is incredible. One of the first things I said to you was that I'm on the straight side of gay, so yes. I knew this was going to go well.
Yeah.
This was going to go very well. In fact, I'm excited when I post this on my social media and it says Life Uncloseted. Yep. I'm super excited because I think probably about a third of my followers are going to say, I knew it. They're just going to be like, I knew that guy the whole time was hiding something.
Yeah. And that's what's so cool. This is what I love about what we're doing with Life Uncloseted, because we're going to start bringing the mysteries of, wait, what do you mean uncloseted? Because so many people are going to make those assumptions about, oh, this is another one of those gay things. And it's not. We are telling stories from all walks of life about challenges that people have had, the closets that they've been in, and the ways that they're finding to come out of the closet, even when it's as challenging as battling the bulge. So let's go back to what happened the moment you popped out of mama's belly and the doctor slapped you on the ass. And he pretty much said you were what? You're a big...
He said, I'm a big boned boy. That was my very first label that I got, was seconds after my birth, the doctor calling me big boned. And as I say, the labels, they did not stop there. I've been called, you know, geez, big guy, chubby, tubby, thickness, fat guy, dairy queen, all of the different names. Which in essence, when I took a step back and finally when I became an adult and kind of looked back at like, my gosh, I started to realize, you know, that's how the world was telling me I fit in.
Yeah.
They were saying, this is where we allow you to fit in. Mm-hmm. But I was this athlete too. At the same time as a kid, I was this athlete, and my dad, and my uncle ran this really popular little league football team. So I was always being pulled in these different directions, you know, and my story really from beginning to end is a classic clash of identity is really what it is.
Well, and it's a classic class of, you know, in my world, it's a closet. You were put in, okay, here you are, you're tubby, you're, you know, all these things, you're Dairy Queen, all these different things. It was a closet that people put us in. And hello, I'm raising my hand here because I'm a big guy too. And that big bone thing was like, yeah, that's just a really like, well, kind of nice way, not so nice way of saying you're fat. So let's get over it. But it was a closet you got put into. And then simultaneously, here you are, this athlete guy. And those two worlds, I'm sure, just started clashing all the time, right?
They did. And it got to a point where what I was doing was the outside of me was communicating something to the world that the world accepted.
Yep.
But what they didn't know was the inside of me, my true intentions of what I really wanted to do, which was be healthy and be that inner athlete.
Yep.
So it was kind of a confusing message because what I wanted to be and how I saw myself was different than what was working in society. So everybody wants you to be that big, fat, jolly Chris Farley character.
Right, right.
And so I went from playing football. Get this. So I grew up, I played football. I started when I was a little kid. I started when I was 6 years old. I played up until I was 16. So my sophomore year of high school, I stopped playing football because my feet hurt. Within that next year, I was in theater productions. Within another year, so I was in band as well. So I literally went from playing on the football field to my senior year twirling a flag. That's great. It was absolutely
great. My God. Okay, so now this is where the listeners are going to go, see, we knew. All along, right? But there's the assumptions people make. It's like, okay, he goes from football guy to twirling flags. Oh, that must mean he's this. And it's like, it's so not true. It's like when we open ourselves to let people be who they are, even if you're the biggest loser and the biggest winner, it's like suddenly, you know, people see one piece of you. They see one perception of you. And then, wait, you're supposed to be this. And that's where all the trouble starts is when people say, but you're supposed to be this. For me to envision you and embrace you and like you, you have to fit in this space, which isn't necessarily true.
Yeah. And I don't fit in any of those boxes. And I learned from a very young age that, you know, you've got, my mom always said, you've got to be different than other kids. And how she meant this was she always wanted me to befriend the kids in class who were being bullied. Yep. She was bullied as a little girl. So she was like, be nice to them. Be nice to the kids who get bullied. Like she wanted me to go up and be nice when nobody else was being nice. Now that's a huge risk because you run the risk of loving that girl or you run the risk of your being bullied yourself because you're showing sensitivity toward them. But I learned from this young age and it started to work for me, you know, like be different, buck the trend, be different. And I didn't mind it. And even to this day in what I do, I'm a fat guy in the fitness industry. I'm still bucking the trend, really. So I just developed a thick skin. So naturally, you know, auditioning for the flag squad and beating out girls to get in the flag squad was a no-brainer for me. And the people that knew me closest and knew me best were like, of course he's doing that. Of course and he's going to get on. He's going to make it. So that's kind of the interesting thing.
You know, it's funny. I can't, and I'm drawing a blank on who this guy is, but I'm part of National Speakers Association. There was a guy 2 years ago that was on stage and he is so funny. And he says, you know, I was on a plane the other day and I was flying to speak at this fitness conference and he's a rather rotund guy like you and I. And the gal next to him kind of gives him a look and he goes, yeah, I'm the before picture. And it was so funny because, you know, he said, you know, all those pictures, yeah, I'm the model for the before pictures. But I think that's part of embrace where you are. That doesn't mean that any of us wouldn't like to be healthier in our own ways and everything. But when you can embrace who you are, what starts to happen? I'm curious, when you started truly embracing who you were, Marty, what really was the big shifts that happened in your life?
Oh my gosh, that question is loaded.
I know it is. That's why I asked it.
You know, my goodness, you're good at this. No, I think that, like I said, mine is a lot about that identity. And there was this point right before I was on The Biggest Loser that I remember looking at myself in the mirror and just telling myself that I'm worthless. And what was happening was, you know, when you struggle with your weight, of course, your whole life, you want out. you want out. I just want to be normal. I want this to be done. So you make all these promises to yourself in the mirror. You know, you'll look at yourself and go, all right, today you're going to lose. You know, today is the first day of the rest of my life and I'm going to do it. Well, the reality is there can only be one of those days. So if you don't do it, you're a failure. By the end of the day, you're a failure already. So after years of these tiny microscopic promises and letting yourself down, they just clash with your confidence and they build you to eventually look and just go, dude, you're worthless. You can't do this. There's no way you're going to be able to. And what I realized in that moment, looking back on it now, is just that a majority of my life, I had spent my time and my precious time and energy convincing the world that I was something that when I looked at myself in the mirror, I didn't like.
Yeah.
And I was convincing them that it was okay to abuse me. Mm-hmm. And call me fat, and that I'm okay with all of this, whether you're my friend or not. You know, this is my identity because you've given it to me. It's all I know. It's how I relate to the world is through this filter, this lens, so to speak. And I'm so comfortable with it. And the thing of it is it's worked. It has really, really worked. It's given me attention, all these other things. But at the end of the day, when I look at myself in the mirror, I say, this identity is moving me away from who I want to be and ultimately killing me. I felt trapped. Absolutely. Like I couldn't be me.
We're trapped under all these layers of stuff that's protecting us from all these other things and that we're hiding from. And I think so many people don't realize that they see somebody who's obese or, you know, overweight and they're like, and it's like, you know, you don't get it. Because when you have either, as you said, kind of the positive thing of, this is what has helped me be accepted. Okay, I'm supposed to be the funny fat guy, you know? That's an attention getter. That's a way of being accepted. That's a way of being embraced. Yeah. Or you go the opposite extreme where, you know, it's okay, you know, look at them, they're gross, whatever. All of this stuff is why a lot of times these layers of, quote, fat, which are really layers of self-worth and everything, show up. And then people don't seem to get the real stuff behind it is, wow, this is just a way of protecting ourselves. This is a way of not showing up in the world. This is the way of not maybe having to deal with something that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about me, and I feel like I'm...
I don't think you're interesting at all, Marty. So
okay. All right, good. We should have started it right there.
Yeah.
Right there, we should have said, this is Marty. He's not interesting.
Yeah, he's not interesting at all. He doesn't have any energy whatsoever. You know, I just thought, oh God, I need a guest on the show. But anyway, carry on, okay. My friend.
I took that energy to the flag squad too.
There you go. Exactly. Very good.
But yeah, it's a defense mechanism. And what makes me a little bit different than a lot of people of size who I work with on a day-to-day basis is there's this natural transition that when people start being bullied or they're meant to feel isolated, they start to turn on themselves.
Yep.
Okay. They turn inward, they turn on themselves, and then it leads to that pollution of one's mind where we turn on ourselves and there's constant negative self-talk. You start to, in essence, believe everything around you. And you turn on yourself. I think instead of doing that, because I don't have a great history of doing that, because remember, I was getting mixed messages. Mm-hmm. On one hand, they were saying you're fat. On the other hand, they're saying you're a football hero.
Right.
Okay.
Well, but so here's something interesting.
I was getting mixed messages.
Yeah, but this is the interesting piece to this. So, you know, I'm a big guy too, but now let's take this to the reason that Life Uncloseted even came into being. This came from my roots as, you know, discovering myself as a gay man. So on one hand, as a child, I'm being told, oh, you're so talented. You play the piano, you do theater, you're creative, all this stuff. But, oh, you can't be gay because that's not good. It's like, it's the mixed message stuff. And then when I would go out for sports and I could actually do something good in sports, they're kind of like, wow, we didn't expect that. So there suddenly was the message of, oh, we didn't expect that from you, because we all kind of think, you know, and at that time I wasn't out. I wasn't gay. You know, I didn't come out till I was 19. Then went back in the closet. But this is where the parallels start to show up. You're getting these mixed messages as a big guy who's playing football, and then boom, you go do the flag thing. I'm being the same guy in a different way. And I don't know that people realize these mixed messages so often is what starts to move us down the pathways we move into in life.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, you eventually feel trapped and resentful and
in a closet.
Yeah. Isolated.
In
a closet, all alone by yourself with very few people to connect with. You know, it's just like, oh my gosh. So where I feel like I'm a little bit different than the average person of size is I didn't completely turn on myself mentally. I feel like my defense mechanism of humor and putting myself out there was my way of kind of settling a lot of that inner turmoil. I kind of pushed it back out, made fun of myself. But I think a lot of people internalize that a lot more and pull further into isolation, so to speak. So
I'm just going to take a guess here that once you got on the set of Biggest Loser, you're going through this 8-month transformation journey, all the great stuff you did, you lost like 140 some pounds. But I'm just curious, did the humor, did the isolation, it had to have continued even in the realm of the Biggest Loser until at some point, even those things started, the snap started happening like, okay, this isn't working here any longer because those were the defense mechanisms. And then suddenly something had to have switched. Am I kind of on the right track there?
Yeah, there is nothing that kills your desire to make fun of yourself for being fat than being thin for the first time in your life. When you outwardly, I have a weird story with my weight. So I lost weight as a little kid from the time I was 9 till the time I was 12. I lost about 80 pounds in that amount of time to play football because there were weight limits. Okay. Yep. So I have a pretty traumatic story surrounding that I don't think we have time to go into. But by the time I was 19 in college, I was about 350 pounds. I decided on my own to lose weight. I'm like, I want to get a girlfriend. I want somebody of the opposite sex to look at me and not just think I'm an eclipse going by.
Right.
I want them to look at me, damn it. So I started losing weight. I started over the summer. So I did it on my own. I lost 95 pounds in about a year. Amazing. All on my own through diet and exercise. I didn't take weight loss pills. I didn't do anything like that. It was all quote unquote the right way, what they'll tell you the right way. And that, so by the time I was on The Biggest Loser, this was literally like my third time going back at all of this stuff. So it was like, oh my gosh, here I go again. Here I am with this mountain of weight that I need to lose. So I took that experience on The Biggest Loser. Of course, everybody takes it important, but I remember asking myself every single day on that show, I remember saying, don't commit to anything you can't live with long term here. Like, just do what they're asking you to do. Take it moment by moment. And can I live with these changes? Can I live with them? Because I was tired of, you know, doing it for a short amount of time and then not doing it. I really wanted to fix the problem. By the end of The Biggest Loser, I realized the problem's all in my mind. the problem usually is, right? My mindset. My mindset.
It's always mindset.
All the baggage that was holding me back from this identity that I felt trapped in. And I just kept sabotaging myself and undermining my own efforts through that negative self-talk that I would have. So, and that's something that even to this day, I still work on, you know.
Let's be real and raw about this. You and I are speakers. We get out on the stage, we talk, and I'm going to admit, almost every time I get ready to either go create a speech or get ready to go out on stage, there's still that little bit of negative self-talk that shows up. They're not going to like me. I'm not going to be good enough. And it's amazing that if you don't learn to like, boom, just quell that in the moment or be with it. There's both ways you can
be
with it or you can quell it. Then you're going to end up being miserable one way or the other. You got to just kind of walk through the forest, so to speak. You got to walk through that fire. And I know, for me, even doing these podcasts, there's going to be moments, you know, especially like now, this is one of the very first ones we're recording for the new one. There's always that, okay, is this going to work as well as the last one? Is there going to be this? But at the end of the day, what I know is I'm good at this. I know I'm good at this.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the human experience is when you have those moments, when you realize I'm good at this, I'm good at knowing when I'm eating too much. I'm good at knowing when I don't feel like exercising. I'm good at knowing that. So acknowledge it. And then know when you're good at ready to exercise as well. There's all these different things that we do. But I know for you, the mindset shift was the hugest pieces of your entire journey is starting to realize mindset is everything.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. A mindset gets you fat. I mean, most of the time when people walk through our doors at my health club, it's called Square One. And it's, I guess for a little bit of background, it's a health club only for people of size. As far as I know, there's only two of us in the country that do this. We have size standards. Yeah. There's only two companies in the country that do this. So everything here is sculpted for the comfort and the needs of big people. So mm-hmm. when the average person walks through the door, they have no clue what it is that has been making them fat all of these years. And yeah. so they're just following what marketing is telling them to do. Yeah. And that is go work out and watch what you're putting in your mouth, tubby. You know, I mean, those are kind of the messages that, that are out there. Watch what you're putting in your yeah. mouth.
Yep.
And go work out. Well, there's this critical third piece, and it's the mindset. It's the whole reason why I got big in the first place. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is that it's very popular to go to a gym. I mean, our people will waste so much money paying yep. for gym memberships for years and hardly ever go. But keep it because my kids might want to go swimming next Saturday kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. they might want to go. They'll spend money on Weight Watchers forever and have an on-again, off-again relationship with that. Hardly ever does anybody walk into a therapist to help them with their weight loss needs. But I'm sitting here telling you, as somebody that struggled with my whole life, most of it is up there. It Most is. Of it is the mindset component, but mm-hmm. that solution is the least popular one. Mm-hmm. It's the least popular one. So we combine a lot of that with our health club. We have a sit-down class at our club called Train Your Brain. And it's basically cognitive behavioral therapy for weight loss is what it is. Mm-hmm. Retraining people to think differently about their relationship with food, themselves, and how they fit into world, especially in the world of dieting and health. Yeah. So many people walk through our front doors and they, you know, they don't, they're not there for positive reasons, first of all.
No.
Okay.
No.
They're not showing up to Disney World with a smile on their face.
No.
This is because they're showing up to confront fears and negative emotions that they've had their whole life. So just the act of them walking in is, I guess you could say, a coming out of sorts.
Well,
on that brave day, they're vulnerable. They're willing
very vulnerable.
To escape. They're escaping that comfort bubble that they've been in for so long to capture a moment like of vulnerability and say, I think I want to do this. Now, the important word there was think, because yeah. a lot of they'll have a brief moment and then a lot of them want to go back in soon after. It's like, nope, we're going to keep you out of this bubble. Mm-hmm. We've got to keep you out. This is where progress is outside of that comfort zone. So,
well, it is. And what's so interesting about what you just shared, Marty, is in the coming out journey, there's like six steps if we go like really, truly like, and we're not going to do all six steps. So what I found so interesting is the first step is confusion. So often it's, am I or am I not gay? Am I not lesbian? Whatever all these things are. In our world as big boned people, the confusion often is, I know I really want to lose weight, but can I? The confusion is, I know I should be healthier, but I don't know how to do it. So there's this confusion thing. Then the next phase we kind of step into is, okay, there's a possibility I know I can be healthy, but I'm not 100% convinced yet I can do this. Then you step into the probability phase. Yes, I know I want to do this, but how do I do it? And what you just described is that whole mindset stuff. You've got to step into the mindset of, I believe I can do this. Just like when we come out of the closet to say, okay, I know I'm gay. There is no getting around this. Now this is who I am. I'm accepting of this. Well, it's the same acceptance that you step into in this battle of the bold stuff. I realize I'm tired of battling the bold. And what I want to do is have a healthier relationship with food, a healthier relationship with exercise, a healthy relationship with me and only me. Yes, it affects the outside world, but man, how... It's amazing to me how much the outside world can affect that thing we call love of self and love of who we are in our heavy or light body statues, whatever those are. And I know that's what you deal with when you're doing this stuff with people one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah. And it almost seems like there's this, so like I say that people of size all have like a different threshold of self-hate. So there's a different threshold. So like where one person could say, you know, I just hate myself when I'm 30 pounds overweight. Some people, it seems like they don't have a cap. Like they could be 800 pounds and it doesn't bother them. So, but I think maybe there are parallels with that. It's like we let this fester and fester and fester so long to the point where I can't handle who I am living this way anymore. Yeah. So there has to be some kind of reaction against it.
Yeah.
And that is awesome because that's how actually our jobs are similar. Is I'm usually the first person they see, and you might be one of the first people you're counseling with.
Very similar. I can be the first one that somebody can say, okay, I'm actually accepting and I'm saying this to someone for the first time that I think I'm gay. Okay, cool. Now let's go deconstruct that and let's really figure that out. In your case, it could be somebody might know they can visually see themselves in the mirror and they can see, okay, I'm heavy or I'm fat. If we want to, I hate the fat word, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But to be able to actually say those words to themselves and say, okay, I know I'm heavy or I'm overweight or I'm fat, however they want to actually be able to verbalize that, to me, that is the first step. It's always the first step to starting to take any big leap of faith that gets you out of the closet you are in life. I had a client the other day, we were talking about this, and she said, you know, I hate to admit this, but I realize I don't want to be married anymore. And this wasn't this wasn't someone coming out of the closet. We were working on some other stuff. She goes, I realize what's really holding me back in my life is I don't want to be married. I don't want to be in this marriage any longer because it's not serving me. It's not serving him. It's not serving either one of us. But she had to be able to say that. That was her closet door opening up. I can't be in this relationship any longer.
Yeah.
And I think these same relationships show up. I know in your health club, they show up all the time. And when people can finally be that vulnerable and they can open themselves up to that space of, okay, I'm really going to say these words, then I know in my work, that's when the transformation begins. It doesn't happen overnight, but that's at least when we start to step into where they're headed. So let's talk a little bit about, I'm sure you get some slack, and I'm going to just be really upfront about this. Let's be raw and real. You were like a raving hunk when you came off of The Biggest Loser. And now you put on some of that weight. And I know for me, I've gone through that same thing. I went through a whole lot of weight loss. And now I put some of it back on. How do you deal with the people who go, who the fuck are you to be opening a health club and all this sort of stuff after you did all this? How do you deal with that kind of backlash?
Okay, so let's first address the weight gain. There's, first of all, a lot of it falls on my shoulders. I knew getting off of The Biggest Loser that I needed to do something in the area of health and help other people for me to stay on track as well. So I have to think that even though I have gained weight since the show, and a majority of the contestants have gained back like at least 80% of their weight too. So what we're finding out is it's just like any old a diet that is out there. It turns out, you know, if you don't continue to do those things, you will backslide. But The Biggest Loser is a little bit different. I'll explain that here in a second. But I submerged and surrounded myself with other big people wanting to be healthy. And I can go on record right now, and I can be raw and tell you that if I didn't do that, I'd be fatter today. I can honestly say I would be bigger than I am now.
Yep, exactly.
If I didn't come home and surround myself with other people and put myself on its own pedestal of being this healthy guy, even though I'm big. Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that still.
And I want to make sure the listeners really get this. You just dropped such a value bomb. Healthy, even though I'm big.
Yep.
That's like a big, big statement right there. In fact, I have a buddy I met at this year at National Speakers Association. We ended up hanging out a lot, and he's a big guy. He's bigger than you and he's bigger than me. And he goes, I'm the healthiest fat guy there is. He goes into his doctor. The doctor's like, I can't believe you weigh this much. Your heart's good. Your blood pressure. Da, da, da. He goes, yeah, I'm just a healthy fat guy. And I think the misconception that we face out in the world, which pisses me off, is just because you're heavy and just because you're big, you're not healthy. And I don't know that that's 100% true all the time.
No, it's terrible. If you ever look on message boards, you'll find out what people really think. But yeah, so it's you can be healthy at any size. The more research that comes out is even saying this as well. And to go back to the point that I was making about The Biggest Loser not quite being like other diets, is that they're finding out that The Biggest Loser, because of the excessive exercise that we do, I mean, on the show, we work out between like 6 and 8 hours a day. Okay, nobody... Right. Nobody does that in real. Like, that's not even realistic. So, right. But what happened was, so I'm going to get a little sciencey, but I'm going to keep it really brief.
No, that's
so,
cool. Go for it, man.
I started at 365 pounds. Okay. Yeah. So to be at 365 pounds, to maintain that that much body weight, you would have to eat probably 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day. So that was my average intake coming into The Biggest Loser, literally overnight and for 9 months straight without deviating or cheating once, that it ended up being like a negative 5,000 calories a day. So there was like a 10,000 calorie swing. Wow. That my body had to get used to. Okay. So yeah, you would keep doing it. So, but by the end of the 9 months of losing weight, you weren't losing anymore. In fact, my weight loss shut down about 3 months before the finale. So get this. So I was working out at the end, like the last 3 months, probably 2 or 3 months of The Biggest Loser. I was working out about 4 hours a day, eating about 1,800 calories a day. I mean, eating the most absolute perfect meals that you can imagine, because that was my full-time job at that time. And I lost like 5 pounds in 3 months, just slaughtering yourself every single day. So, so what they've kind of found out from this is basically our metabolisms are damaged. So if you have somebody from who's been on The Biggest Loser and went through this social experiment, that's what I call it. Mm-hmm. If you have somebody that went through the social experiment and lost weight in this way, what they're finding is that our metabolisms actually aren't rebounding. So the more weight that you put on after the show, you should start burning more calories. Actually, the opposite has happened. So our bodies, because we start packing on fat, it starts convincing yourself that your muscle mass is getting smaller and smaller. Yeah. And so your calories go down. Even compared to gastric bypass community, they had a better rebound in their metabolism. The reason I say this is because if I was on The Biggest Loser 11 years ago, and if you would have lined up 100 doctors, fitness professionals, and said, okay, we've got Marty Wolf, who's going to go on The Biggest Loser and lose weight through diet and exercise. And then we have Terry Joe, who's going to get gastric bypass, which one would you recommend? Probably almost all of them would have said, do it through diet and exercise, and not recommended bariatric surgery. But this suggests otherwise. So there are people from Biggest Loser walking around with slower metabolisms because of the way that they chose to do this, to lose weight. So in my,
but I think that's typical. I mean, I think that's one of the most typical things is what we don't understand is people's metabolisms are different. So I can tell you, I'm 300 pounds. I'm 6'4". I know I could lose a good 20 to 50 pounds. If my medical professionals had their way, they'd tell me I need to lose 70. I have lost 70 and I look like I'm skin and bone. So there's where the big bone thing comes in. It does begin to be true, but my metabolism is so much different than a counterpart who is 6'1", and he's ripped muscles and all that, you know? So you got to learn this piece of it. I think it's the biggest piece of it is, what is your metabolism doing? What is it? And I'm going to give a real life example of what just happened this morning. Before I got on the podcast, I hadn't been able to have breakfast first thing in the morning. So I did my first couple of calls that I had to be on, and then I had breakfast. And what I know is, if I wait like that, the best thing I can eat is to eat protein. So I had eggs with spinach and a little bit of turkey and a little bit of ham, sauteed that all together. And what it does is that kickstarts my metabolism right out the gate. It's like, okay, boom, I've got the energy I need to keep doing this, especially to be on this with Marty because he's so freaking high energy. But also my body had to get woke up. Those are the things that I think people need to start paying attention to. Your body will tell you what's working for you. And it isn't always the fad diets or the other things that are happening. Pay attention to what you know your body's saying. Hey, this feels really good. I know when I have like an egg scramble like that, my body's going to say, this feels really good. Do more of that.
Yep. Yep.
That's, I know that's kind of where you come from.
It's exactly right. Yeah. That metabolism is not the same.
Yeah. It is. And at square one, I know that's what you do too, is you try to find what's that exercise that's going to keep that person like, this feels good to me. Now, some of it's going to be harder than they want probably too, but just the fact that they get to walk into a space. And we all know this, even if you're a traditional gym goer, you're going to be a whole lot more motivated to walk into a space where other people look just like you than to walk into a space where you're the only one that looks like yourself.
Yeah. Yep. And I explain this all the time. It's the main reason why I have a health club for people of size is because of what I actually call a reverse discrimination. And that is where big people have perceptions about thin people that maybe they're perfect. They kind of oversimplify or over-glorify their lives. So when a big person walks into a regular gym, it's actually a more isolating experience for that big person because they are that already negative mindset is on red hot alert because there's nobody there connecting with them. People, in fact, in their minds, the big person's thinking, why is everybody staring at me? They must be staring at me because I'm different, because I'm so fat, because I can't do anything. And then you look around, what's the information that they're retrieving? They're retrieving information that, oh, she's prettier than I am. He can do more than I am. Nobody's showing me the equipment. I feel like a complete outsider here. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to last that long in any kind of a situation with that. There is not connection. We don't connect with the people. We just give them access to a room and let them rent equipment. Yep. Like I've always said, a treadmill is not going to change your mindset. What you really need is a human experience. A human experience. Humans can change other humans' mindsets. They can at least challenge them to think differently. A treadmill is not going to do that. So you're looking for solutions in all the wrong places. Plus, you already asked the question like, you know, what feedback do I get being a fat guy in the fitness industry? Well, I'll tell you this, it's lonely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've spoken at the health club industry show, and boy, I felt the same way. I walked around there, and it was actually somewhat, I can say this because I'm being raw with you, but it was a little bit of a slap in the face to me is what it was, because it almost seemed like you go there and it's this excuse to dress up and look cute and wear as little clothing as you can to show that off. Well, that sends confusing message to everybody about what fitness is about. Is fitness really about looking good? Because a lot of people in the fitness industry, that is what it's about. It is about the beach bod. It's about looking good. That is their built-in reward. But for so many people like me that I represent, that will never be their reward.
No.
So how do we become rewarded for doing the right things? We have to look inward. We have to place that on our habits and our behaviors. So when I go there and I see, you know, girls dressing down and looking all cute and trying to get as little clothes as possible to show off what they've worked, to me, representing a population that we need this industry, it is life or death to us. Mm-hmm. It really is. It becomes a little bit of a slap in the face, you know? And then I started to realize, dude, this is why you're here, is because you are a minority and they need to hear this message. Mm-hmm. And I started, so I talked in front of health club owners and fitness professionals, and I started my speech. I was a keynote speaker. I started my speech by saying, hi, I'm Marty Wolf, and I stand before you today, a proud food addict. So I don't know if the words food addict have ever been mentioned on that stage, but I said it that day. And so the first second they're like, oh my gosh, we're about to learn something different. And that was my whole purpose. You know, we need this industry just as much, if not more.
Yes.
And our experiences and our mindsets at least need to be brought to the table. And that was my whole position with that particular speech and that outlet. But I do think at the end of the day, people of size would rather come to somebody like me and deal and sort with their issues than somebody who seemingly has it all together. Mm-hmm. If they didn't think that way, then why, after I opened my health club, was the most popular comment that I heard, I'm so glad you did this because I'm so tired of working out next to the skinny bitch.
Yep. Yep. I think what you just demonstrated, Marty, is what this whole podcast is about, is how much uncloseting there is to be done in our world. Even whether you're cut and ripped or whatever, or you're big, heavy duty guys like us, so much of the uncloseting is about uncloseting our mindsets, not only within ourselves, but also towards other people. And you just demonstrated it beautifully, my man. I'm so excited that you are one of the very first to be on this new journey of mine, the Life Uncloseted podcast. And as we wrap it up, I want to ask you one question that I know is going to come out of left field, but I know you're a man that thinks on his feet. So if you could just share something that is really inspiring to those who are listening about what it takes to truly go live that life uncloseted, to just go be who you are, what would you love to leave the listeners with?
Here's what I believe. Self-honesty. Mm. You've got to be true to yourself. It's a common theme of what I teach here at Square One. I think it all starts with being honest to yourself. In fact, the hidden meaning of starting at Square One, I think that's the first step. Self-honesty, asking those important questions of who am I? Yeah. What have I been hiding? What have I been holding back? I think that that is so important, because whether you're going on a journey discovering who you are with your sexuality or your identity in some way, or it's your weight, you've got to start from some home base. Mm-hmm. You've got to know what's at the essence of you and what's worth fighting for before you can start accepting that game plan to move forward. It is so, so critical you have that level of self-honesty. And I have a question for you. It's a little bit of a humorous one, sure. But it's one that I was thinking about. Okay. Yeah. In fact, I wrote down a list of like four or five different questions to bounce off of you as my token gay man that I can talk to at this moment.
There you go. Cool. Okay. What's your question, man?
Here we go. Okay. Number one, can anybody be 100% secure with their sexuality without examining whether they're gay to begin with?
No, I don't believe they can.
I don't think so. I think it has to cross your mind. At least you have to allow it to cross your mind and say, could I? Am I attracted? You've got to open your mind up
absolutely,
to that,
man.
Before
absolutely.
You could be 100% secure in what you are.
Yep.
In I what agree. You are. Yep. Okay, the next thing is, if everybody who displays a Confederate flag on their property had to replace it with a rainbow flag for 1 week, what would happen?
I think the world would tilt over.
These are just the random thoughts that cross my mind.
So we are in the mode of where, you know, Marty is taking over the podcast with his random thoughts and questions. So cool. What's the next one, man?
Am I becoming too much of a distraction?
No. I love this. This is a great way to wrap it up. So what's number three?
Okay. Number three is, does flirting with straight men, does that excite you? Yes or no? Like, is it more fun to flirt with like a straight man than it is a gay man?
It doesn't make any difference. No. I mean, I love flirting with straight men because it's fun to watch sometimes the reaction, but I know who I can do that with. I know who I mean, there are certain guys I wouldn't even attempt it with, but some of my best buddies are straight guys, and I can always say, girl, if you were just, you know,
yes.
So it's kind of like that, you know, it makes no difference to me. It's no different than a straight guy flirting with a girl. There's going to be certain girls you would flirt with and certain ones you won't, unless you're just one of those, you know, flirting creeps that thinks you can flirt with anything that walks. And I won't say who I'm thinking of right now that's running the country. But anyway, okay, we're moving on. So.
Last question, cool. I promise. Okay, if being gay was the norm and being straight was the minority, would straight nightclubs be as much fun as gay nightclubs?
Absolutely not.
I agree. Not. I totally
no, know. No way. Well, you know, anything is possible, but I don't think so. I love those questions. What a great way to wrap everything up, brother. I'm so glad we're getting to know each other from the bottom of my heart. Thanks for giving of yourself and being who you are in this world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate, and I'm honored to be on the relaunch of everything. I think that that's really cool. And I just appreciate the opportunity to share my story and get to know you better.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much.
Yep. Take care, bud.
And that's it. That's a wrap. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end. But don't worry, we'll be back in just a couple of days with another episode with new guests, new tips, new tricks, new wisdom about how you can go live your life uncloseted. And you know what? A lot of people out there may not even know we exist. So if you feel so compelled, share us. Tell people about it. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. Share it from your phone. Wherever you can, spread the word. Because the more people that we reach, the better the planet will be when everybody is living their life uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the show, that big, bold move expert, and that guy that constantly wants to help people step out, step up, and step into living their life uncloseted. Have a great couple of days, everyone, and we will be right back with you very, very soon. Take care.